There were three different Ohio State running backs averaging more than 7 yards a carry, and all three of them scored touchdowns. So on a Three Thoughts Thursday, that seems pretty good.
Yeah, neat. Let's only talk about three running backs.
Okay, we will. Well, we'll probably talk about some other things because we have multiple thoughts, and this is a Thursday on the beat. He's Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. Here's a guarantee. This is an injury-free episode of the beat. We're not going to do it.
Okay.
Okay? We had updates on Wednesday night on snap judgments. At least we tried.
Yeah.
And we could posit some things, and we're able to look at the Buckeyes. Did we learn a whole lot?
Of course not.
Of course not. But that's why we need to talk about some other things, because there actually is another game on Saturday. It's at noon. It's senior day. Ohio State is playing Rutgers. They need to win. They actually, Ryan Day said it on Tuesday. I was actually surprised, Berm, that one of the thoughts I've had this week is how much more Ryan Day has talked about getting to Indy this week. And in my mind, I'm like, they started 10-0. They've been so good. But I just skipped straight ahead to the college football playoff. It's really important to this team to beat Rutgers, to win the rivalry, and get to Indianapolis, because nobody on this Ohio State roster has done that. I was actually kind of, I don't know, relieved's not the word, reminded from Ryan Day that that's something that is one of the goals. And it almost like slipped my mind.
I think that's just a natural response to how last year went. When you look at all of the micro goals along the way, and then you don't hit any, but then you hit the big goal, it does shift the way that you view this stuff. And you say, well, sure, they can lose this game. And like, until last year, really, I mean, yeah, the last 10 years you've been able to lose a game if you're like Ohio State or Alabama or whatever and get to the playoffs still. But now that you're in the 12-team era, like, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but like the regular season has lost some luster. So there's games where you're like, well, if they lose, it's okay. But like, obviously no one wants to lose. But then for Ryan Day to draw back and say, hey, you know what? We actually want to win a Big Ten championship, because that's a ring that this team didn't get a year ago. They got three rings for three different bowl games, but they didn't get a Big Ten championship ring. And and I think that there is a part of them.
They're running out of room.
All right. There's probably a part of them that wants to beat Indiana.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think that when you're Ohio State or Alabama or Georgia or whatever, when you're one of these programs at the top of your respective league, and then all of a sudden people start to chirp about another team and how good they are. Like we saw it last week, even with Georgia and Texas, like Kirby Smart onside kicking up 21 points in the third quarter. Like, these are the teams you want to remind them that, hey, you're not where you think you are yet. And
that happened with Indiana a year ago.
Yeah, and I think that was a lesson that Ohio State enjoyed delivering, and I think they would like to do it again. But obviously there's two games that they have to win first to get there. And I don't think that there's a single scenario outside of everybody in the Big Ten, which is impossible, losing the last two games, that allows Ohio State to get to the Big Ten championship. If they lose one of these two, they're not going to make it. So nobody expects them to lose to Rutgers, obviously, but you need to still take this one seriously, because it is a step you have to take.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you mentioned, that Ohio State, they didn't skip it. They were trying to win those other goals, and they came up short. And then you're just like, oh, well, you went to the top of the list. And I know that people will get upset that I'm saying the national championship trumps the game and the rivalry is the most important thing to a lot of Ohio State fans. And I totally get it. I'm not trying to be dismissive of it. Like, but Will Howard and Jack Sawyer and Emeka Ogbuka, you know, when they're talking about that afterwards and how great they feel, they don't have any choice in the matter. They don't get to go back in time and say, well, you know what, I would trade that for two sets of gold pants. So I can understand that, like, they don't have any choice to say it in that matter. But when you can accomplish that one goal, which is so critical at the top, and nobody else in the country gets to do it in a given year, and they were able to do that last year. We mentioned that with load management as well, that like few teams are just in the position that Ohio State is, where they can now be like, they could have been like, forget the rest of this, and let's just get ready for the middle of December. And even if they have to host a playoff game, who cares? But that is not the way that they're approaching it. So long-winded way for me to say, it was nice to get that reminder directly from Ryan Day and from some of these Buckeyes throughout this week that like that's a thing that truly matters to them.
It does make me wonder, in America, if you're listening to this, which you are, there are probably like three different groups of Ohio State fans, right? There's the ones that even a year ago came around to the idea that you can lose this game and still win the national championship and that's okay. There's the other ones that say there's no way, you can never lose the Michigan game. Doesn't matter what you do after. And then there's the ones in the middle saying, well, I could be convinced if the rivalry didn't feel so mismanaged in the last couple of years, or inappropriately lost because of cheating or whatever. So I wonder, like, what's the number? Is it, if Ohio State were to win this year and next year, would that middle group be like, you know what, we're going to move to the first group? Because now we can understand, maybe you lose every other year to Michigan, but you're still in the playoff every year. You still have a championship shot every year. Like, what does it ever come around to where you're like, well, I get it now. We can just...
I think it was your idea. If it was week number one,
yeah,
like that would alleviate some of it. Because yeah, the way that it's trending right now, and we know that this will be the case, but I'm thinking ahead to Three Thoughts Thanksgiving, where it's like everything is on the line to get to Indianapolis, plus the rivalry. And it's like, this is one of the biggest, this could be one of the most important versions of the game that's ever happened. And we know that in the last few years, a lot of those have been the case in 2016 yeah, and all these, like, and 2006 and games of the century. But we'll be building that up in a level that's like, this, there is so much on the line. And it'll always be that way. I'm not suggesting that it would be better if nobody cared about it, because that's what makes the game itself yeah, so great. But it's like, if you put all that up front, which is sort of like what happened with Ohio State and Texas, and it's like, okay, that is what it is, and then you move forward. But when everything is building to this crescendo, I understand it's what makes it more important is when it is. But I think both fan bases will probably be like, you know what, it'd be better to get this out of the way, and then understand what else we could do to make up for it later on.
Because there is still a world where Ohio State and Michigan could play twice in December, you know, or play a second time in December or in January. So, like, it does take on a different
space. That's true.
This is a whole different conversation.
That's not Rutgers. Because, how did I get here?
I don't know. This is what happens on Three Thoughts Thursday. Sometimes the thoughts meander. What is the one thought you have about Rutgers that could make this weekend's game feel instructional or educational, or to learn something to make us feel different than we felt after the Purdue and UCLA games, which felt at times to be not, again, we both said after the UCLA game, this one, that wasn't boring to me. That was a good opportunity for Ohio State to do some things. Purdue was boring. What makes this weekend not feel that way?
I think Rutgers is not a talented football team. I can't think of one position on their team where Ohio State would take anybody off of Rutgers and put them into the two deep. It sounds dismissive, but I truly mean it. I mean, they are not a talented team, but how are they able to make some of these games against Ohio State
competitive,
instructional, chippy? It's Greg Schiano will try anything. And I think that's the thing that will lock Ohio State in as they get through the last couple of days of practice and then prepare to go out there at noon on Saturday. Whether that is special teams gimmickry, whether that was the double snap that we saw a couple years ago, there's a half dozen examples of Greg Schiano pushing the envelope because he knows what an upset would do for his team. And not even an upset. Sometimes it's just like they played him within three scores. Like, let's go sell that as a recruiting pitch across the state of New Jersey. He is a good coach. The end of his tenure as the defensive coordinator at Ohio State was a little bit of a mess. Dysfunctional communication, everything on that staff was not going the way that it wanted. I still have a lot of respect for Greg Schiano as a coach. I will poke fun at his driving skills, but he's going to come up with some things to try and give his team a chance. He will motivate them, and he will pull out all the stops. And I think for whatever Rutgers is going to be deficient with their talent on offense and defense, it will be reminders from Brian Hartline, from Matt Patricia, from Larry Johnson, from Nate Ebner, from Rob Keyes, everybody. You have to be aware for this. You have to prepare for that. And I think more than the way that Ohio State practiced on Tuesday night or Wednesday night, it will be, you know, covering all bases, because there's going to be also plays where Riley Pettijohn is going to be on the field and he's going to have to be on alert for this over here. Or you're going to have Gabe Van Sickle at guard and maybe this blitz is going to come from a way that you didn't anticipate. I think the schematics and the prepared approach is what's going to be important on Saturday. It's not the players.
I think that this game sets up to be much more like a home game version of the Purdue game than it did the UCLA game, which UCLA, I think, actually has better athletes than Purdue or Rutgers, but they're poorly coached and they don't really know. They don't have any purpose. They're sort of just waiting for the next shoe to drop until they get a head coach. Greg Schiano has his program in place. Now, it's not one that's generally going to succeed because they can't recruit well enough to Rutgers. They don't have the money that other schools around the country are spending. But like Purdue, Barry Odom, like, I thought that was a really well-coached team that day. I thought they played really well, and it kept the game. It's 34-10. Like, I think that that's the kind of game we're heading toward this weekend, the more I think about it, especially considering all of the questions about who's going to play and who's not. We're not talking about injuries on this episode, but that does matter when you start to look at a potential game script.
Well, there's a different conversation about load management, right, and
who needs to play, yeah, versus who can or can't. So I think that that does set up for a game that, again, is going to keep you on your toes. That's one thing that will prevent Ohio State from sleepwalking through this game in the third quarter, fourth quarter, like they did at Illinois.
So do you think that Ryan Day has adjusted what the number would need to be on the scoreboard to get Julian Sain out specifically on Saturday?
No, I mean, at halftime, what, Ohio State was up 24 to nothing?
I think it was 27.
27
right?
Nothing at half against UCLA? Or?
Wasn't it 27?
They only scored.
They kicked two field goals?
Yeah, kicked one field goal in the second half. Well, one at the end of the half. Yeah, so 21. It was 27 nothing at the end of the first half. And again, to me, that, and I've said it multiple times, I said it on Snap Judgments on Saturday, I said it at the live show at Roosters on Monday, I would have taken him out then. But nobody asked me, nor should they. I think
I just asked you right now.
I think that more than four touchdown lead should be enough to say, okay, we're not risking anything. We're taking Julian out and letting Lincoln get some key moments. Let him get some tryouts on film for other schools. And I say that somewhat in jest, but like I think they owe that to Lincoln,
yeah,
at this point. Say, hey, this is what he can do, and help him get the resume out there. So if you go into the half up 31-3, 28-0, I don't see any reason in the world Julian Sain or any of the offensive starters should be back out there in the second half. There's way too much on the line the next 2 weeks after. And if you win this game on Saturday 38-27 because Rutgers scores 24 points in the second half against your backups, yeah, it's going to be annoying. Maybe you screw up your points per game thing that you're trying to set records in. But, like, that doesn't matter. What matters is getting out of here healthy and getting out of here with an opportunity to focus on Michigan without the other distractions. So, or going into Sunday going, okay, well, what does this mean if Julian has had a little bit of an ankle thing this week and then all of a sudden he got stepped down late in the third quarter and then it's like, did he get re-aggravated? So, you just don't need that. So just go out there, take care of business ASAP. And that's why, like, I'm glad the weather looks nice on Saturday. I think it gives an opportunity. Rutgers is terrible against the run. They're better against the pass. But what Jeremiah Carnell, anybody, I don't care who's out there. Like, come out, get Julian his numbers, and get him out.
I think that's one of those examples where the stats are lying to you because they are amongst the worst run defense in the country. So everyone else is like, well, sure, why should we even bother to throw? I think what you said is a good point. We're getting to this, the transfer portal window is going to be open quite soon. And when you talk about Ohio State owing it to Lincoln Kienholz, I think that that's a fair point to make. And the reality is that as Ohio State does start to look towards 2026, which is Ryan Day said on Tuesday, they're not doing that right now. This is the time for football. They had two off dates to negotiate with agents or talk about NFL draft decisions or do all those things to prepare for the future, to let everybody know where they're at, where the program's at, where the players are at. There's not really a scenario that I can imagine where Ohio State will be able to afford to pay what it paid for a backup quarterback to both Lincoln Kienholz and Tavian St. Clair. So I know that that's a premature conversation, but not only could Ryan Day and Billy Fessler feel like that's a deserved opportunity for him to market himself, but in the short term, Julian Sain did have to test out his ankle, did have to get that taped up on Saturday, and Lincoln Kienholz is one play away, and this team is going to go to the college football playoff. It has, for all intents and purposes, clinched a spot in the field already. So Lincoln Kienholz has still not played a ton of football. If, God forbid, something happens where they need to go to the backup, and that's, you know, they got a reminder of that. And I wonder if that would be in Ryan Day's mind at all. It's like, here's the total number of snaps that Lincoln has got this
year. How different would last year's game against Michigan had been if you had a quality backup that you felt like you could put in the game and run the offense with? And that did not happen. And so you had to put a hobbled, damaged Will Howard out there in the second, third, and fourth quarter. And just think about how much different that could have been if you would have said, hey, There's a minimal drop off and we're good with this. So yeah, you got to give him a shot. But it's also, Ryan Day may not think about the future, and nor should he this week or next, but in this new era of college football recruiting, like, you need to be able to tell quarterbacks, hey, you're coming here to develop to be a quarterback at Ohio State. Maybe you're not going to be the Heisman candidate at Ohio State. Maybe you're going to play behind one, but you're going to spend 3 years here, and we're going to have you ready to go. We're going to give you opportunities to still excel and develop and put yourself out there so that the rest of the country can see you. And there are plenty of quarterbacks like Lincoln Kienholz around the country who, remember, Lincoln was committed to Washington, okay? Like, Ohio State could have been playing Lincoln Kienholz in September, and how differently things have worked out. But Lincoln chose to go to Ohio State for this opportunity, and not with the promise that he was ever going to be the starter. Nobody ever thought that when Lincoln Kienholz committed to Ohio State, he was going to be the starter. Dylan Raiola was committed to Ohio State. They had Devin Brown. They had Kyle McCord. They had all these other guys. It was never a thought like, well, this is our quarterback. It was like, hey, he's a developmental guy. We can grow with him. That's the same thing with Luke Fahey in the 2026 class. Like, you're going to teach him how to be a quarterback in college football. And then Ryan Day learned this lesson 7 years ago with Joe Burrow. Like, you can push him out.
It's a great sales pitch.
And you can say, even our backups win Heismans. They just win them elsewhere. And that's okay. So I do think that it's something that not only Lincoln Kienholz should be wanting and asking for, and Ohio State should be considering and thinking about ways to provide it, but it's that way across other positions. Like, you have Bryson Rogers. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. Like, he's played excellent, and all of a sudden, a guy that looked like he was slipping away into the ether here at Ohio State is like, now other schools are going to be coming after him. Now it's a catch-22 for Ohio State, because you're like, well, we don't want you to leave, but we don't want to have to pay you starter money, but here we are. So it's a fun world, isn't it?
Gosh, what a problem. You have too many good players that want to be part of your program. But I think, just to put a bow on that, you have all these other long-term benefits, but the short-run situation and scenario for Lincoln Kienholz, and this has come up with, you know, Ohio State with the running backs. And I think we can finish by talking about where we think the run game is now. But
where are you on run game?
Where are you on run game is a million-dollar question. It's a great question indeed. But the Lincoln thing is, he's obviously in a much better situation than he was in the Cotton Bowl against Missouri, but we're still talking about a very small, limited sample size of reps, because he didn't get any of them last year. And, you know, I think he looks better on Saturday than he did in the spring. There were days in the spring where he looked like he could have actually started for Ohio State. Those conversations were very real in this building right behind us until Julian Sain jumped on a rocket ship and took off. So, you know, that's really not here or nor there, but we've always seen Ryan Day sort of operate with like four scores as a close game. Yeah. I don't know that that has to be the case against Rutgers, and I especially not with this level of defense.
Yeah, and it's fine if you want to put Lincoln out there with their other starters. I'm saying I wouldn't play any offensive starters if you have a four score lead. But if the best thing you can do for Lincoln is to run him out there with the first team offensive line and the first team receivers and first team running backs, go ahead.
Yeah,
but you don't need to put your quarterback in that position at all. So,
So on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you on run game?
Well, last week was really encouraging. I mean, it was really encouraging. And again, we talked about it on Wednesday's edition of the Beat, the Stock Report. I think the biggest thing is that you're starting to realize that you have depth and flexibility on the offensive line that maybe you wondered or worried you wouldn't have, as you see Gabe Van Sickle and Josh Padilla and even Ethan Anianwa starting to all surge. Now you've got 8 or 9 offensive linemen that you can feel comfortable playing, and that changes things in a major way. If somebody's having a rough day, then you go. But now you start to see Bo Jackson and Isaiah West starting to get going. You're starting to see James Peoples get going. 3 guys averaging 7 yards a carry. I don't care who you're playing. It's a college football game in the Big Ten. If you got 3 guys averaging 7 yards a carry, you're doing something right. And it's not just the offensive line. It's not just the play calling. It's not just the running backs. It's everything working in concert. And Ryan Day has been very patient with the run game. I think that there are times this year when he's been perhaps over complimentary of where things were in order to avoid, like, pretend or to avoid people thinking he was pushing a panic button. And I think it's paying off. Again, I
think he was actually not like worried about it.
No, I don't think he was either. But I think that if he had said, well, it's not, there's a lot to, you know, he says every week, well, there's things we got to work on. If he said, well, this is just unacceptable, we need to fix this, I think people would start pushing a little bit different button. But
that button was already being pushed.
It's
outside.
Just, yeah, it's just the way the schedule has worked out. I think it really has afforded Ohio State the opportunity to build slowly towards something. And I don't think in the year 2025 that you have to outgain Michigan on the ground next week to win the game. Let me be very clear. I don't think that you have to do that. And I hope Ryan Day has given up on that concept, because I think that that was something that motivated him a year ago to still try it. And I don't think that it's necessary. But you have to be able to get third and one. You have to be able to get a first down inside of the 20-yard line to keep a drive going. So if you can start to feel comfortable that, hey, we've got the dudes now, the offensive line's getting the push, they understand their assignments, they were getting blocking from the tight ends, and guys like Max Clair and Jelani Thurman, who've never really been that guy, are starting to grow into those roles. I think that you have to look at where the run game is right now and compare it to a month ago. Say, this is significantly better. I mean, let's just literally a month ago, let's go back to Wisconsin. It was a not good performance for the run game in Madison. No. Now, that's a top five run defense in the country. I don't care, blah, blah, blah. It's Ohio State. They should have been able to run the ball against Wisconsin. It's starting to come along.
Well, so, they threw it 40 times.
It's the beauty of the schedule. Last year, the Buckeyes had the opportunity to tinker because there was like the mini breaks. There was the perfectly set up schedule.
Yeah.
And this year, you've had multiple training camp opportunities. And I think it's going to yield positive results as we head into December.
I was going to call it training camp 3.0 again to get into three thoughts, but I saved it to the very end to wrap it all up. Because it's almost over, thankfully. Ohio State, Rutgers. The last of this.
I have to ask this question. Okay. Just three thoughts, and maybe we'll talk about it on BPs, on Bold Predictions on Friday. But
okay.
As we say goodbye to another class of seniors at Ohio State, guys who, you know, there's obviously a number of juniors that we know are going to be playing their final game or maybe not playing in their final game at Ohio State. And who knows? But which player do you feel you have seen the biggest change from the time they got here to now that's leaving? It could be a guy that got here as a transfer like Lorenzo Styles. It could be a guy that got here as a transfer like Tywan Malone.
Yeah.
Like who's the guy that you're like, man, that is the guy who embodies what Ohio State football in this era of the sport is about.
So biggest development on and off the field, I would say, I feel like I'm stealing your answer. Caden Curry's development into, as we watch him right now, the heart and soul leader of this team. I know that that's too far. Sonny Styles is the actual heart and soul. He's the blocko. And I've seen a ton of growth from him. He has learned how to smile over the last 4 years. That's great. And I've told that story before. I think everybody knows how we feel about Sonny and the way that he's blossomed as a player and person and everything. He was never bad at any of that stuff. Yeah. He was always a good player. He was always a good person. But you know what? He's elevated into an elite player in person at the same time. But Caden, and Ryan Day alluded to this maybe 6 weeks ago, you know, played with a lot of energy. He played with a lot of passion, had to change physically, had to understand how to play the game, had to wait his turn, had to go through a lot of patience. And now when you're talking about one of those truth tellers and spokespeople for the Buckeyes now at this point and putting his heart on his sleeve and playing with, you know, all the cliches, Caden, and you predicted this for him while he was during his recruitment coming out of the state of Indiana. So I know you're not surprised by it, but I bet you appreciate it at a pretty high level.
I just appreciate when kids don't quit. And Caden Curry, I mean, that's never been in his vocabulary. But if you think about Caden Curry a year ago, I can only imagine, and I've never asked anybody, nor will I, because it's inappropriate, it's uncouth, whatever. I bet Indiana, when Kurt Cignetti was on his way there, put together some very appealing pitch to Caden Curry. And I'm glad Ohio State doesn't have to play against him. But to me, the player that it is that, like, we don't ever appreciate him enough, and he was absolutely dragged over the coals a year ago, and he doesn't say much now, it's Davison Igbinosa. Like, what a turnaround from a guy coming here as a second-year guy from Ole Miss, didn't talk to anybody, It still isn't like the world. He's chatty on the field, but he's still not the most talkative guy off of it. But the way that he's developed and the way he's become like a true shutdown corner opposite Jermaine Matthews. And like, I just think that he's in this era of college football, like that is the quintessential success story for what Ohio State can do for a player like that.
Yeah.
He was a starting cornerback at Ole Miss as a freshman and left, which in itself is like crazy. But to arrive, then he's instrumental in bringing Quinshon Judkins here. Like there's things that he did that you're I don't think we appreciate Davison Igbinosa enough, and probably because of the fact that he got called for all those penalties a year ago and people thought he stunk or whatever. Like, he didn't. He was just a little handsy, and he got a reputation. He fixed it this offseason. He's been really, really good, and he's becoming like Kenyatta Jackson, like one of those guys that maybe doesn't lead the way we've always been accustomed to players at Ohio State leading.
Yeah.
But he's leading. And you can listen to Jermaine Matthews talk about Davis and Igbinosun, listen to any of the cornerbacks talk about what Davison has done. And it's really awesome. And again, Kenyatta is probably worthy of having this same exact conversation. But I said it and I wrote about it on Tuesday at Letterman Row and Field Level Thoughts. But like watching as Ohio State scored a touchdown with 3 minutes to go in the first half, and Kenyatta Jackson was out like at the hash marks, welcoming the special teams back and high-fiving all of the kickers and the long snapper, and like then immediately goes and gets the defense ready. And like, this is... it's so cool when we get to see the buy-in actually click.
Yeah.
And, you know, to those guys, thank you for these years. We don't get a chance to say it to everyone, but, you know, if they hear it, I hope they hear it because it's been appreciated.
Kenyatta's a great one because even if we saw all this stuff and the potential both on and off the field with Caden Curry, that was definitely not the case with Kenyatta. And we got to Big Ten Media Days and you're saying, well, you know, if it couldn't be Sonny for Blocko, it might be Kenyatta. And we're like,
it's also a reminder that special teams is in real life, but neither is social media. And when we've spent three off seasons in Kenyatta Jackson's career at Ohio State on like transfer watch, I'm like, oh, well, someone in his family said this, or he liked this tweet, or he has friends at Florida State and he's retweeting their stuff. Like, this is, it's just funny. I'm just really grateful we get the opportunity to watch these things unfold. And for those of you who are a part of it, thank you. For those of you who get to watch it with us, I hope you appreciate it as well.
Yeah, it's been fun. And guess what? They're not even done yet, but they will get their senior day, those veterans, at noon. Well, slightly before noon.
If you're coming to the game on Saturday, get there early so you can be in the stadium. Senior day stuff should start about like 11:40.
Yeah, 11:40, 11:45, somewhere around there. Be there early. Looks like it's going to be, as Berm said, a beautiful day. I don't like to jinx the weather, but looking forward to that last regular season game. And I assume the last game in the Horseshoe this year. We can't make any guarantees, but we'll see what happens. That's at least where my mindset is right now as we wrap up things on a Three Things Thursday on the Beat. Thanks so much for joining us. He is Berm. I'm Austin. We will talk to you Friday for bold predictions for Ohio State Rutgers.